You're listening to WRFI, Watkins Glen, Ithaca, and this is the Made of Clay Report. And our guest on this hour of the Made of Clay Report is Megan Sheehan Rosen. Megan, it's good to have you on the show this morning.
Thank you. It's good to be here.
And so we're gonna in a minute we'll cut to some of your music, but first, how do you want to start the conversation? Who are you? What do we need to know to start this conversation? Some of your attributes, your personal qualities, the labels you wear. You take it and go with it wherever you want to go.
Okay. Well, first and foremost, I connect as a human with the other humans,
sure,
in our community,
and probably some non-human
and that's
sentient
right,
beings,
right.
As
yeah,
it were.
In the natural environment as well. Yeah, I appreciate sort of that level of connection with mm-hmm. other living creatures, and I appreciate that about being here in Ithaca too. Mm-hmm. I think it's a community that supports. It's a great community to be a part of, both people and the environment. And I've been drawn to Ithaca. I originally came here to go to Ithaca College and lived here for about 6 years at that time, and then moved away for a few years, and then have been back now, mm-hmm. and back to stay this time around. So it's a place that I've been naturally drawn to.
Mm-hmm.
I'm a very independent person.
And by that you mean, now you want to unpack that?
Yeah.
Because that's, you know, yes.
Well, I'm very comfortable with myself and with what is important to me.
Mm-hmm.
And from what I've been told, that's been a quality that I've had for a long, since I was very young, and being very kind of comfortable and confident in what's mm-hmm. important to me. I have a hard time faking or, you know, being untrue to that,
right.
when something is of value to me.
Right, it's, right. So in a clash between being comfortable in your own skin and living with yourself versus an institution or somebody else's expectations, you're going to try to be true to yourself.
Yeah.
And I would, from knowing you a little bit, you would try to accommodate those other things, but you're not going to tie yourself up too much.
Right. And I guess that it's something that just that comes easy to me. Like
mm-hmm.
that's the natural inclination is mm-hmm. to be myself and to kind of be on that path. And of course, yeah, like certainly accommodating and not wanting to impact somebody else in a negative way and like not wanting to push my own stuff on somebody else. But when it comes to me and what I feel is right, that's something it's not a challenge for me,
right,
to stick with that,
right,
for myself.
You don't want to put a other person in a position of compromising themselves because you don't want to be compromised either in a
right.
respectful.
Right.
Relationship.
Yeah.
That used to be a definition of maturity. We've lost the ability to talk about that language of being comfortable in your own skin and being able to respect the space for the other and your own to move. That's the essence of maturity.
Right. Yeah,
powerful.
Absolutely.
So you brought some music with you, and we're going to start with Pete Seeger and Turn, Turn, Turn to Everything There Is a Season. Do you want to say anything about that before we start it? Why is that in your playlist?
Well, I love Pete Seeger. He's a great role model, really inspiring person to me. I have great respect and admiration for. And I like this song a lot because I connect with that in sort of going through life and understanding that through the ups and downs and positives and negatives that they're all connected and there's a reason for all of that.
Yes, yes. And it's based on a text from the Hebrew scriptures from the wisdom literature, which is appropriate.
To everything, turn, 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 there is a season. Turn, 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 and a time to every purpose under heaven. A time to be born, a time to die, a time to plant, a time to reap, a time to kill, a time to heal, a time to laugh, a time to weep. To everything, turn, 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 there is a season, turn, 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 and a time for every purpose under heaven. A time to build up, a time to break down, a time to dance, a time to mourn, a time to cast away stones, a time to gather stones together. To everything, turn, 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 there is a season, turn, 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 and a time to every purpose under heaven. A time of love, a time of hate, a time of war, a time of peace, a time you may embrace, a time to refrain from embracing. To everything, turn, 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 there is a season, turn, 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 and a time for every purpose under heaven. A time to gain, a time to lose, a time to rend, a time to sow, a time of love, a time of hate, a time of peace. I swear it's not too late. To everything, turn, 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 there is a season, turn, 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 and a time to every purpose under heaven. To everything, turn, 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 there is a season.
And that was Pete Seeger, and To Everything There Is a Season, Turn, Turn, Turn. And our guest on this hour of the Made of Clay Report is Megan Sheehan Rosen. You're listening to WRFI, Watkins Glen, Ithaca. So, Megan, tell me about what experience or experiences, what have been the most critical ones to help shape who you are?
Well, certainly I'd go back to how I was brought up, and my family background is, I think, most core to who I am as a person. And I feel really fortunate and grateful to have the family that I have, who are the most special people to me.
What was it about the family that made a difference for you, that has made a difference for you?
Well, there's a lot of love and a lot of sort of understanding and support. I'm the youngest of three kids. Mm-hmm. My parents raised us, and my sister, the middle sibling, I have an older brother as well. She died, and that was certainly the most impactful experience I've ever had.
How old were you when she died?
I was 22.
Uh-huh.
And this is about 2002, and so that was something that was obviously a total shock to our family. Mm-hmm, something, you know, breaking up what was a tight bond, and in some ways has brought us closer together, I think. But when I think about what experience has been most impactful in my life, that's definitely it. Was that experience of losing my best friend and sister, and at that point sort of like transitioning to adulthood,
right?
Definitely put me on a path that I wouldn't have expected otherwise.
What did it teach you about yourself that you didn't know before?
Well, it certainly taught me empathy and sympathy for other people's experiencing pain and loss in a way that I could never have imagined or understood. And it also taught me, I have a different perspective on life. I just have a different value and understanding of how valuable and unknown and uncertain our life is and our time here. And so it helps me, because I'm aware of it every day, it helps mm-hmm. me to connect in a real way with people that I think previous to that experience, it would have been, oh, well, that, you know, that's far off. And that's, I could have probably gone through life interacting in less real connection ways.
Not seeking the depth or seeking the relationship connection. Right. What impresses me though is that you also could have reacted this should never have happened and become bitter and resentful of life, but you didn't.
Well, there was obviously some of that in the process.
Oh yeah, but I mean, some people in this culture, some people can get to the age of 40 or 45 before they lose to death someone they've been close to. Right. And that's how disconnected we are from people. But when you lose, when people die around you when you're young, life just takes a different you.
It makes it real, right? Like there's this certain, it forces a realness.
And the realness
brings it down.
Okay, so the realness is coming down to earth. I'm going to project here. What do you mean by realness? Because it's a rich word.
Okay. Well, there's a lot of distraction out there and every day, and I have a different feeling now than before then about what is important. Mm-hmm. So the realness and I would say what is actually important. There's a lot of fluff and a lot of stuff that really doesn't matter and is not worth getting upset over or, you know, whatever. And I think that experiencing that in the way that I did helped me to kind of get underneath all of that and actually get down to what matters.
How has it changed the way you pursue friendship or relationship?
Well, like I was saying before, that I have a hard time faking it.
Yep.
So that's always been a part. But I think...
But that was a part of you before your sister died.
Yeah, right. Yeah. But I think I've always appreciated being able to connect in a real way with somebody and somebody who's... Before I go there, though, I'll also say that I'm a very private person. Mm-hmm. Like doing something like this is totally out of my comfort zone.
And I sense it. And I'm trying to... Because the issue here is to both honor it by not pushing or things, but also to honor that our personal lives span a distance from what is truly private to what is truly public. Yep. And in this middle distance across that almost imperceptible boundary is community.
Absolutely.
Where we are known as we are and we know others as they are. And that's what we're trying to do here.
And I appreciate that and I respect that. And that's why I'm here.
I thank you and 170 or 80 other people who've agreed to and have been on the show.
Because I agree that's important. And I was in the process of deciding to do this. I thought, well, okay, I appreciate that this is happening, and therefore if I'm going to enjoy somebody else doing that and that you're doing this, then I should also participate as my contribution to the community. But in terms of connecting with other people, so where I was saying, like, I'm a private person, it takes me a while to really open up and connect with people in that deep way. And
what are you doing in that while? Because I think it's really, it's a common phrase, I'm a private person, it takes a while. But what is the while about? What's going on in your mind or in your heart or in your body that's kind of processing something before you feel it's time?
Well, I'm sure a lot of it has to do with trust. Mm-hmm. If I'm going to open up and share and connect with somebody in more than a kind of everyday way, do I trust you? You know, are you somebody that I think will appreciate who I am and where I'm at?
Will you take the knowledge of me and not abuse it, not use it against me either as gossip or share it with others willy-nilly where it's not truly honored?
Yeah. And then also, is it reciprocated?
Yeah.
You know, am I feeling like you? And that's where I'm growing and maturing. Mm-hmm. I'm learning that it goes both ways, so that if I'm feeling like somebody's not opening up to me, I always have to check back in with myself and say, well, was I closed off too, you know, or was I giving right. off that vibe as well?
Yep.
So I'm in it. And so obviously, like, there's different dynamics. And so, for example, my husband is, which is part of why we're a great balance and a great team, is
he's
that
he's
somebody, he's great. Yeah. So so it's easy because yeah. he can kind of like meet me uh-huh. closer to where I am.
Sure.
And so when I've met other people in that, sometimes it's just really easy, it's easier flow, easier dynamic. Mm-hmm. When I meet somebody more like myself, for example, like I think my brothers and I are similar in a way in that, like, it takes a little bit more, you know, to get there
yeah.
with each other.
Yeah.
But that's also why, like, people are so interesting, and it's a, you know, it's never, you never know. You never right. know what to expect.
Right. How do you carry your sister with you?
Well, I carry certainly the memories of mm-hmm. of her and the time that we had together. And I also, and like I had said, with my family being so close, she's very much present in all of our lives. Mm-hmm. One of the things that helped all of us during the healing process was noticing what we consider signs of her presence mm-hmm, mm-hmm. around the mm-hmm. world, around, you know, around us. So for example, red-tailed hawks is something that has been a comforting sort of sign.
Right, right.
And, you know, I share that. And I think other people have also experienced various things in nature and the world that remind them of somebody. And there's no, it doesn't matter if it's real or not. It's because it's helpful.
It's, the sign is for you.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
And it helps you. Yeah. And there's nothing wrong with that.
Right.
Yeah.
So, but anyway, so it's certainly like there's signs and stuff, mm-hmm. but I also, there are parts of who she was, her character and her personality mm-hmm. that were just, she was a beautiful person. And I like to remember that and think about how she would, you know, because I certainly learned a lot from her. And she, mm-hmm. when I was saying my brother and I are kind of similar, she was different. And
right.
so she was great because she, she was happy to make friends, you know, talk
yeah,
to anybody,
yeah,
and,
yeah.
Really help people out. She was very compassionate. And so I like to channel that sometimes mm-hmm, in thinking mm-hmm. about how, you know, we got feedback from people, that she knew that we didn't know, that how she helped them. And that was certainly really, really meaningful yeah. to know what a role she played in people's lives. And so I think even though it can be hard to talk about, I think it's really important to talk about. Mm-hmm. Like I think my natural inclination is kind of to keep stuff inside and not share too much, but certainly my parents have been great role models in that sense of like that we have to talk about it, you know, because
right.
that's the only way to keep her alive with us. And then for people like my husband didn't meet her, and my nephews didn't meet her. And so
right.
for people that, but they know her because
right.
we've talked
right.
about her and
right.
shared stories.
Right. And in a certain sense, this is one of the things that I do through Shared Journeys, is that we need to tell our stories and with discretion each other's stories, because if we don't, we become dumb as a community. We know less than we really know. But if we talk, people can pick from it what makes sense. They can take from it an example. You know, it's not about, when you said your sister, people she helped, I heard that word in a different way than I normally, because we have such rhetoric against being too helpful or inappropriately helpful. But when you say that, this is our relationship. This is how this person made a difference in my life. Mm-hmm. And in that way, we help by telling each other's stories and all sorts of little ways of relating to each other that we overlook when we're on our own little paths. Anyway, I'm rambling. You brought some more music. I'm wondering what would be good to play at this particular moment.
Let's play Colleen's song.
I was thinking that might be a good one. So this is Ocean Song. And how do you pronounce Colleen's last
Kata.
Name? Kata. Okay. Here we go.
Thank you.
And that was Colleen Cataugh and Ocean Song. And you're listening to WRFI, Watkins Glen, Ithaca. And this is the Made of Clay Report. And our guest on this hour is Megan Sheehan Rosen. Megan, can you tell us a little bit about the issues that animate your daily life, that give some meaning and direction for you?
Yeah.
Yeah. What do you do? or what do you care about?
Okay, well, as I answer that, I want to tell you my connection with Colleen, which is connected to that answer.
Okay.
She was one of my professors and advisors when I was at Ithaca College and studying Spanish. And she was, it was my freshman year, it was like early on. And I went into class and she was talking about the School of the Americas. And my brother had just recently gotten arrested there. And I was learning about this, you know, the School of the Americas.
Sure, where they're training military officers largely for Latin America.
Right.
Yeah.
Using U.S. tax dollars. And so
tax dollars and questionable interrogation and other policing techniques.
Right.
Yeah.
So I was learning about this and it was so reassuring and great to hear somebody here, you know, like outside of my family talking, Colleen, you know, like such a great person. And so anyway, so we connected immediately because of that. But that's connected because, you know, that activist lifestyle, standing up, I guess more specifically, standing up for what I believe in, certainly seeing injustices and wanting to address that from where I am.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and so going back to, like, the way I was raised, like, we lived very simply, but we were comfortable, and my parents were sure to help us recognize our privilege and then the responsibility that we had, that we have as a result of, you know, being in a place of privilege and understanding that not every, you know, that everybody is in a different place. And so that's sort of the foundation. And then going into, you know, like being arrested, being at places like the School of the Americas before the war, and so that's a foundation. That's something that I feel very strongly about, identifying, I guess not getting too comfortable, identifying where, like, what my role is, and using where I'm at to be able to help, to help others, especially when it's like when I feel the responsibility that, for example, my government is doing something that I don't agree with, or, you know, to bring it more locally, just to be engaged in a community. And I would say that's where I'm at, because there were certainly over the years where I was much more actively involved with larger
issues, policy issues. Yeah. Yeah.
And most recently, where I've felt most comfortable, and I think I accept that there's kind of a flow and a reason for that, and I accept that that's where I'm at right now, has been much more locally focused and, like, literally getting my hands in the ground. And so since my husband and I moved back here 4 years ago, we bought some land, and we've, like, our main focus has been growing food, putting food in the ground, planting trees, and trying to live simply. So when you ask, like, what animates me, like, what's most important to me, is that living simply and locally.
Right.
Thinking very consciously about what is it that I need, and as much as, you know, like, I'm a big fan of minimal consumerism, and as much as possible supporting our local economy when I do need to get something. And then also what we're trying to do is grow a lot of our own food, so that we're, you know, sort of trying to sustain ourselves somewhat on our own land. And that's been literally, but it's been really grounding, to be doing that. And, it's been a nice shift, I think, to just kind of, like, I feel like I've recently, by doing some of that, gotten out of my head a lot, and just gotten more like, what's important, you know, like what's growing in the ground today.
Right. And I think it comes to you talked about how there's kind of a flow of life and things change. I mean, I was born into a situation where we raised all the food that we ate. If we had the vegetable, I probably had helped put the seed in the ground to plant it. And if we slaughtered the animal, we had helped raise it, and we had actually, so we knew which one we were killing and what we were eating when we did that. And so I grew up with a really tight relationship with food, and where it comes from and what it means in all sorts of ways. I'm less there now, but I've been there. So I don't, but what I heard you say before, as you were making this flow, this movement, it brought to mind a statement by somebody I'd met in Detroit, where she was working in a very poor black neighborhood in Detroit, one of many. And she said, "We don't go out to do justice. We go out to discover justice. Because justice will be different for each person in the community, and sometimes it may be an opposite thing, because what people need are different things. And privilege isn't an absolute state so much of it is having more than what you need and knowing when you can make that available to somebody else," which is what I heard in your story, is how can you respond to the pain and see, oh, do I have something in my possession or in my way of being that can address that in a useful way.
And then also the responsibility of just having my voice be heard if something is happening that I can contribute to, or, you know,
to the dialogue and to the consideration and to working it through.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's very powerful. That's very, very powerful. It's a community of care in both the affective and in the direct service and intellectual as well. So you are gardening. You are close to your food now, but also you work with food.
Yeah.
So I mean,
it's a nice pairing. Yeah. Well, when I moved back to Ithaca about 4 years ago, I took that transition as an opportunity to think about what do I actually want to do with my time and my life, really. But I feel really fortunate to have been able to take this at this point in my life, have this transition. Well, first of all, to come back sort of home, or home, you know, home region, from being far away. But to I was primed to just settle down, to put down roots, mm-hmm. and to be in a place where I was going to be for a long time. And so, as part of that transition, I had recently read a couple books that really impacted or helped me with that decision making, or that, you know, that process. And one of them was Barbara Kingsolver's Animal Vegetable Miracle, where they live for a year. They live off of only local, or what they grew, or something they got. I found that really inspiring. And then the other one, actually somebody, a sort of regional author, Shannon Hayes, wrote a book called Radical Homemakers. I think she did her grad work at Cornell, and she lives somewhere in the region on a family farm. And her book was a whole bunch of testimony about people in some way or another, what she calls radical homemakers, but people either living off the land or what we would now, I guess, call non-traditional ways of supporting, how they're contributing to their household, mm-hmm. but maybe not by going out 8 hours a day into a job in an office or something. So, you know, some were urban, some were rural. But what I really liked about that was she took from an economist standpoint of the contributions of how much, if you're not going and working this 40-hour a week job, how much you're still contributing, how much you're often saving, and then the whole quality of life piece too, which is huge. And I really connect strongly with that, you know, really trying to keep that quality of life, whatever that means for who, you know, but in this case for me, of what do we want. And anyway, so both of those books were helpful in my sort of unpacking what it is that I wanted to do. And it just so happened that when I got to Ithaca, Friendship Donations Network was hiring for their only staff position, which is part-time coordinator position. And I had, when I lived here before, I had never heard about this organization, mm-hmm. Which is a food rescue organization and has been in Ithaca since 1988. But as soon as I looked into it, I was like, wow, that's a great fit. That's, mm-hmm. it makes so much sense. What a wonderful thing that just is kind of common sense. Like, of course we should have.
So can you describe it? Cause it has become more widely known in just recent years,
yeah.
But can you describe it for the listeners?
Yeah. It's Friendship Donations Network, and it was founded by Sarah Pines here in Ithaca in 1988, and the mission of the organization is to rescue good food from being thrown away, from mm-hmm. being wasted, and instead get it to people who can use it, mostly through food pantries, also through Loaves and Fishes and some other outreach, community outreach through
and food distribution. What do they call that? The food hubs.
And now the neighborhood food hubs. Which is a way for, because most of what we work with on a daily basis is food donations from grocery stores, and then during this time of year from farmers and farmers markets, stuff that they have left over. Mm-hmm. But then a couple years back, we started, a volunteer had the idea to do these neighborhood food hubs, which was an easy way for people who have a home garden or who belong to a CSA to be able to donate any of the extra produce that they might have. One of the cool things about the organization is that it's primarily all volunteers who make it happen. Mm-hmm. Like I said, with the exception of this part-time position, but really without the volunteers, it wouldn't exist. Yeah. But it's, I think, just a wonderful, my position aside, I think it's a wonderful community resource that Ithaca has this mm-hmm. opportunity for businesses and farms and individuals to be able to have a place 7 days a week, every single day of the year, to be able to donate food rather than throw it away.
Right.
And especially with the colleges here, like when colleges go on break, their kitchens will donate truckloads of stuff that they have that won't last until the students get back. And so that paired with, obviously, that good food shouldn't be going to the landfill or getting composted. But then that paired with the fact that there are a lot of people in our community who don't have enough and are struggling right. to make ends meet, and then this food can be available for free and just make it that much easier for people to have good food.
So this was not an issue that you were aware of before you came back here.
Right.
So
I had, while I was away, I had gone back to school and I got my master's in social work. And so certainly that helps. Like, that is a good, mm-hmm. a good pairing. But when I did my MSW, I was on the path of end of life care and hospice social work. That's what I had trained for. Right. And that's what I was going for.
In an institutional setting as opposed to a real community.
Yeah. And that's what felt like a good fit at that time. And then the transition back to Ithaca, sort of allowed me to think about what it is that how I wanted to spend my time and what I wanted to do. Mm-hmm. And so being at Friendship Donations Network is an awesome organization, and I'm really happy to be working with them. And it also allows me sort of the freedom and flexibility to have time to be, trying to grow in our own food and doing some work on our own land. Mm-hmm. And so I really appreciate that. I guess I'm going to call it quality of life, because that's what, it's like be able to decide how I want to spend my time. And there was certainly some struggle, and maybe I was projecting or maybe it was real, but of that, what am I doing with my time? I got all this education and now I'm working part-time and I'm,
right.
what am I actually doing? Sort of some of that traditional definition of what is success or professional, mm-hmm. whatever, but fortunately I had plenty of support from people close to me, but I was able to do what felt right to me.
Right. And this comes back to how you started the show in terms of being a person who is, and I'm not going to remember the words that you used, but they were very powerful, that you are comfortable in your own choices and your own skin when you are making them, in a way that takes into consideration everybody around you. And that's, and having a non, what we call non-traditional, that's really so funny, is that this was traditional
right.
prior to having monetized so many pieces of the economy. You know, everybody understood that most of our lives were spent in unpaid labor. And even nowadays, most of the time of our lives is spent in unpaid labor, but we just don't know how to value it or to value ourselves when we live that way.
Yeah. And I think it's so good to remind ourselves of that, you know, mm-hmm. of just being able to think outside the box and not get tied down to that money, you know, like
right.
that having that be the that's not the value, that's not the worth, rather, like there's right. so much more than that.
But for you, it wasn't just the money; it was questioning the worth of having gotten an education and spent those resources and then not directly used it.
Right.
So how did you make peace? How did you bless yourself in the choice that you've made, or how are you? And because it's an ongoing process for those of us who live this way, mm-hmm. How do you continue to remind yourself of the value of what you're doing and why you're doing it?
Well, I remind myself that all not just the education piece, but all of the experiences that I've mm-hmm. had are contributing to the work that I'm doing. And I think it's the time. Like, I think I really appreciate how I'm able to decide how I want to spend my time, how I can have quiet time, how I can have slow time, mm-hmm. you know. Mm-hmm. I don't do well with being rushed. No, but really I think that's important.
Yeah.
I think
yeah,
so
yeah.
much of it is like identifying what's healthy for me, like what's good for me, and how what factors contribute to me being able to be a healthy and productive person, because that affects how I'm going to interact with everybody
right.
in the world.
Right.
And
right.
so I identify that, and actually this is something that, and I want to just point out that like I totally recognize that this is, well, we were talking about privilege, but this, I
sure.
mean, this is coming from like a place, I feel fortunate to like be able to be thinking about and talking about that, you know, like having that be a consideration, because I know that there's a lot of people that just don't, they don't have the choice.
Well, but I'm going to challenge that. Having come up out of poverty, there are people who are poor who are desperate because they've never faced their anxiety, and that doesn't blame them for their poverty or their anxiety, but there has not been that moment of truth telling that allows them to slow down and consolidate what little they have into what more they can make.
Right.
And so the privilege piece is really hard. It shouldn't be a weapon, but it also, nor should it be a guilt thing. It's people have to stop and sort themselves out. And we often don't. And even when we're very rushed, sometimes if you're just open to the idea that there is an insight here that could make sense of this, can I be open to it?
Mm-hmm.
Will it happen? And for people who are living under extreme stress, just entertaining that as a possibility can be the step to actually achieving it.
Yeah.
So I don't. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah. No need to do a mea culpa in terms of your privilege, but at the same time, what I'm trying to do with this show is to normalize conversations about meaningful lives with people who don't really know each other that well.
Mm-hmm.
And I think we will more quickly learn to do so if we avail ourselves
yeah.
of each other.
Yeah, I think I appreciate you saying that. That's a good
yeah.
point.
Yeah.
Well, one of the things that I learned and was surprised and happy to learn in social work school was the importance of self-care, and how they really emphasized that as part of the curriculum.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, oh, how cool, you know, like that. What a great thing to be a part of this academic thread, you know.
Sure.
And that's something that is very much part of what I've tried to, you know, maintain that, and think it's going to be different for everybody at different times
mm-hmm,
in my life. It's going to
sure.
mean a different thing, but that is crucial to be able to be productive and to be able to give and connect in a healthy way in my community, in my work.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah, absolutely. Let's cut to a song. What would you like to play next?
Let's do the Bothy Band. Do the Bothy
okay.
Band?
Yeah. Yeah, we've got the Salamanca, the Banshee, and Sailor's
yeah.
Bonnet.
Yeah.
Sure. Here we go. listening to WRFI, Watkins Glen, Ithaca, and this is the Made of Clay Report, and our guest on this hour is Megan Sheehan Rosen. Megan, I want to begin to bring together a few threads that we've talked about. And you mentioned early in the hour that you're a private person who takes time to decide or to trust. It takes time for trust to emerge. You also described needing to realize that you need to move slowly. And one of the things, community, one person said, a community moves at about 3 miles an hour, which is about the pace that a person walks, whereas society often moves at about, 20 to 60 miles an hour, which is out of sync with the walking pace. And as I'm thinking about that, I'm also thinking about two fundamentally different approaches to trust. One approach to trust is something that rests in the performance of the other. And am I going to observe the other and see whether I can count on them and we can come to an agreement that we agree to, and so we trust each other because we have history, and but it rests more in the other, my being able to count on the other. Another view of trust is, for me to experience life, I have to trust it, which means trusting the others. And so if I'm suspicious or wary, they're not going to trust me. So we're never going to have a good relationship as early as we could. We're never going to find out what's possible until I lead with trust. Mm-hmm. And it sounds like you're shifting, but you're also kind of in that stage of life in those 30 something years, mm-hmm. where the whole notion of trust gets reworked in a lot of people's lives. Am I striking a chord here? Are we on to something?
Absolutely, okay. Yeah. Well, I think that I've had several experiences over the recent years that I've learned. I'm hoping now to the point when it happens again that I'll be able to trust more going into it.
Yeah.
Because I think what has happened is there will be like a stress or a conflict or a challenge. Mm-hmm. And then ultimately it gets resolved. And looking back in hindsight, it's, of course, things worked out the way that they needed to. Mm-hmm, and mm-hmm. going through some of those hurdles were important to get into where we are now.
And conflict does not undermine trust.
Right.
It doesn't have to.
Right. Yeah. But I think that what I like about keeping that trust in the forefront mm-hmm. is that it can help relieve some of that stress.
Right. It doesn't add fuel to the fire.
Yeah.
Right.
It's sort of, in a way, it's like, it's not being passive. It's not sitting back and letting things happen. But it's understanding that there's more going on, that we don't have control over everything, I think, is a good thing to
keep
in mind.
We don't have control. We're not aware of everything.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah.
So, in Islam, it's inshallah. It's God willing, and having all of these traditions, reality willing. I mean, if we can say that, it can reduce a little bit of the pressure. Yeah. But I also hear you saying very clearly that these trying or difficult times in relationships are essential for the relationship to change.
Yes. Yeah. Well, and I think balance. Like that's a huge, that's a core part of what I value is understanding that balance.
Right. And you don't know it unless you've gone over.
Exactly.
And you kind of constantly going slightly over and correcting. And it's also called resilience.
Yep.
Yeah. And optimism and hope and trust are all part of the bundle that allow us to be resilient.
Yep. And then in another view of trust, I just had an experience where I was blueberry picking with my parents, mm-hmm. and it was beautiful place. And where you went, it was a self-pay station on the back porch, and there was nobody there. And it was a scale and a bucket of money, and you weighed it. And we were there. My parents were like, wow, wouldn't the world be a better place if, like, they were just really impacted by the trust.
Right.
And I think that it's great to experience that. Because mm-hmm. I think it kind of itself perpetuates too. Like
expands the realm of what we can think of.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And there have been some restaurants where they've tried with, you order from the menu, but you pay what you can. And there has been success. And this is from my own. When we live out of this trust way, it's not out of a contract. and I'm pardon me for a didactic digression here. A contract says everything has a price and you need to know it and you need to pay for it either emotionally or with money or whatever because that's what it costs you. But when you live in this trust way where you give what you can and you take what you need, it's more what we would have understood historically as covenant. You know, you give from your abundance and you take from your need and you try not to be dishonest with others and try to encourage them to be honest with you.
Yep. So. And it's so simple.
It is, and it's very hard to lean into.
Certainly, challenge, especially given like where we're at, generally speaking. You know, mainstream culture, but
we're in a time of fear and consumerism, and yet not wanting to be either in fear or in consumerism, and we don't know what to do next.
Yeah.
What do you? We're getting close to the end of the hour. What do you do to restore your sense of balance or optimism or strength? You know, what do you do intellectually, emotionally, physically, you know, daily, weekly, monthly, annually? What do you do to kind of keep yourself, correcting yourself, balancing yourself?
One of the most important things for me is breathing, consciously and intentionally breathing. That was something that somebody, I will say taught me, but just, I think reminded me of the importance of, and since that moment years ago, it's been first and foremost, anytime I need to just get reset. And again, it's so simple, but it's so impactful. And I think that it's like it's the body mind connection there because it's.
So you take a deep breath or do you just well, take a more intentional breath?
I usually do three deep breaths because it's slow. It's like a slowing down and it's a pausing and it's amazing how quick, like right away that I will feel differently. Mm-hmm. So both getting oxygen into my body, but also just like pausing for a minute. That's very helpful. But also just honestly, like being outside and being in nature is something that is so helpful for me when I just need to be rejuvenated or be reset. If I'm struggling with something, being outside, sometimes talking through it to myself.
Right.
But,
and if you're gardening, it's unless you're just puttering, if you're really physically, it's strenuous and labor. It's like house cleaning.
And the physical activity, and I know that from periods in my life where I've had less of that, and it's very much impacted me, like both emotionally and that's a big, and I guess it that's like. Just goes to show the importance of the mind and body and spirit
connection. I've come to the point where I want 12 to 16 hours of physical labor in my life each week. I need in 2 to 4 hour increments. I need that kind of physical connection. Otherwise, I get squirrely.
Yeah.
You know.
Yep.
Yeah. And you're cooking, I'm assuming, the food that you're raising and all of these other kind of social relational sorts of things.
We are, yeah. We're putting up a lot, trying to preserve, really, like, I don't think we haven't, for the most part, bought vegetables since we've been doing the garden. Mm-hmm. We put it away and we're still eating from last year as we're harvesting this year.
It's neat.
It's really gratifying. You know, it's grounding, but it's also really satisfying and fun, like to be able to pull a carrot up out of the ground.
Wipe it up, wash it off and eat it. Megan, it's been really good to get to know you.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah. What song would you like to close with today?
I think we'll have to do the Bob Marley.
Oh, yes. Okay. Sun is shining. Do you want to say anything about this before we play it?
I think it'll speak for itself.
Okay, here we go.